Good afternoon. So, as Richard said, my name is Michael Delaney. I'm the CTO and co-founder of a startup here in London called Elevate Direct. So my background really is in software development. I sort of get involved in all sorts of programming languages and so on. And these days, I'm pretty much into the DevOps movement as well, like anybody else in a startup. What I'm going to try and cover off today, basically, is just an overview of Elevate, the business, what we're trying to do, the technology choices that we made and the decisions we made, what's worked and what hasn't worked, and then the future as we see it. Okay, so what's Elevate do? Well, we're building a platform that enables employers to recruit contractors directly. So that's avoiding the use of recruitment agencies. So quick show of hands, how many people have been involved with recruitment agencies in the past? Any contractors out there? Just a few. So who would like to see that change? Okay, so I mean, for an organization that wants to go direct and avoid the use of an agency, there are a lot of challenges to that. So you've got a large volume. Typically what you'll have is large volumes of applicants. The problem there becomes then, if you've got such a large volume of applicants, what do? I mean, you've got hundreds of applicants, it's gonna take you a lot of time. Often they're very irrelevant to what you want. It becomes very laborious, very time consuming, and very expensive. As a result, the candidates get a bad experience. So this is really why people turn to recruitment agencies. So if Elevate is gonna succeed then, we have to sort of deal with those problems. So how are we enabling a direct strategy? Well, what Elevate does is we customize recommendations of candidates. We order and rank them based on their company fit, their skills fit, the rate that they're charging, their availability, their location, and so on. So even if you do get 500 applicants for your job, which is often the case, the top 5 to 10 candidates are gonna be the ones that are most suitable to your organization, customized specifically for that. So you're not gonna go out and say, search for a C# developer and get the world's greatest developer. You get the developer that suits your company. And we do that using lots of analytics and various other pieces of machine learning. So what that does then is basically allows you to save time and money because you're getting that 5 to 10 candidates. Just like with Google, you do a search on Google, you know, you use the first page, you don't bother going down to the 20th page anymore. So how do we do that? Well, we use, as I said, we use data, we analyze hiring patterns, we model cultural similarity between companies, we model the skill relationships with candidates, and we analyze hundreds of thousands of CVs using machine learning and natural language processing and so on. So all this is all coming together to give you that simple little choice of having 5 to 10 people instead of, you know, trying to look through 200 people. So just to give you a background, we've been going for about 2.5 years. So during that time, some things have worked, some things haven't worked. But what we've done is we've always sort of went with a set of guidelines. You know, we're a startup, and we need to follow a certain set of principles. We didn't have a large budget, we were bootstrapped. So these are some of the guidelines that we went for from the very beginning. So use the best tool for the job, it's pretty obvious. Make sure you can hire people with those skills, or just use Elevate and we'll hire them for you. favorite technologies, you know, this is important. Obviously, it's very tempting to go out and pick up the latest new JavaScript library, but you know, who knows if it's gonna be around next week. Favor open source technology. Again, very important for startups as well. Open source is often free, and there's many other advantages to using open source technology. Make sure it's here to stay. You don't want to pick up a framework or a tool today and it's gone next week. And then for other advantages is leveraging managed services or leveraging platform as a service. This is really key if you want a bit of business agility and so on. And the last couple of things then are make sure you can pay for support. Even if today you're using a tool because it's free, when you get busy later on, the last thing you want to do is to be stuck on your own on an island with that tool. You want to pay people to help you to configure it and so on. And another key thing as well is don't get locked in. If you can avoid it, try not to get locked in as much as you can. Yeah, so the key thing really is, for us anyway, we were self-funded, so get something out the door. You know, that's the key thing. Yeah, you only get one chance, so. Okay, so going back to, this is about 2.5 years ago, we were picking our stack. We had a number of different high-level areas to deal with. So the first thing was our application stack, web apps and so on. And the contenders at the time were Java, specifically we prototypes on Spring, Ruby and Rails, and C# and ASP.NET. So for me, I'd done some Java development over the years, quite a lot, but not as recent. Ruby and Rails I had a recent experience with. So it came down to those two more than anything, really, Ruby and Rails and C#. In the end, I didn't think that Rails was going to handle the complexity of our app pretty well. I mean, that's, you know, Rails has been successful in many, many companies. I'm not going to sit here and say that it's not a good framework. But for me, it didn't fit in. And the big driver, again, was back to my earlier point, is get something out the door. I had a lot of experience with .NET and C#, and that was the least risky bet for me. And I actually do really like C#, so that's obviously a benefit as well. So this was actually a more difficult one for us. Pick a data science stack. It wasn't my area of expertise, and we didn't have any of the founders with sort of expertise in that area. So there was a lot of prototyping, a lot of playing around. I went along to a lot of meetups, a lot of talks, you know, try and get into the people who were there, really find out what, you know, this great tool that everyone's talking about today, is it really that easy to use? Whereas all, you know, what's the real story behind it? And we had a number of contenders that came up, Java, specifically Mahout, which is an open source machine learning sort of library. It was okay. I got working with it. I managed to get some samples through, and it was pretty strong about choosing it for a long time. I looked into more data science-y, more traditional academic-like tools like R. Frankly, that's as much as I did, really. I had a look, and I just left. After that, I kind of realized we need to hire other people. And then Python was the last one, and this was actually refreshing. I was getting pretty depressed at this stage. But Python really kind of jumped up. When you go to these talks, people will talk about R and Julia and all these different frameworks, but really the constant throughout there is Python. Everyone loves it because it's easy to use. You get a data scientist who spent 10 years in academia, and now they want to move into, you know, programming and stuff. They're not going to learn Java, typically. It's too heavyweight for them. Python is really easy, so that was the key thing. You can hire people. If we go back to my guidelines area, make sure you can hire people in those areas. Lots of these tools are very esoteric. It might cost you serious money to pay someone to do it for you. And yeah, great machine learning support in Python. So here's probably more buzzword friendly, this section. It's picking our data stacks, what sort of tools do we want to use. Again, go back to the guidelines, you know, use open source stuff, but make sure it's got commercial support and so on. So very early on, it was obvious to us that we would need some sort of search function in the system. People want to search for candidates would want to search for jobs and so on. At the time, Solr was the real standout piece, really. I mean, Elasticsearch wasn't around 2.5 years ago. It probably was, but it was very beta. Solr had really good .NET support. And actually, the guy who wrote the .NET support works for us now, so that's good. MongoDB, well, we have a lot of document-oriented data. So, you know, the key thing about the choices here is they're all chosen for a reason. It's not just to pack up my CV with loads of new sexy technologies. So we had lots of document-oriented data. You can imagine someone's profile, like a CV, would be very document-oriented. To try and, you know, lay that out across a relational database, it takes a lot of tables, lots of joins, and, you know, you don't need that sort of complexity. The access patterns are actually quite simple. And then Redis and RabbitMQ, if you've not heard of either of them, basically they're two really solid open source projects. Actually, Redis is now available on Azure, so that's probably a good choice, I guess. And RabbitMQ, so we do tend to have we've separated our workload between the front-end web tier and the back-end services, so we use RabbitMQ as the glue for that. So this was what we went with. But the last choice then was, where are we going to host all this stuff? And I'm sure this is what everyone wants to hear about today. We are at an Azure conference. And picking a cloud, so the bad news, I'm afraid. Unfortunately, we didn't go with Azure, so I'll hold my hands up. So we picked a cloud that the contenders at the time were Rackspace, GoGrid were the first two I checked out, quite similar to each other. They had the sort of the benefit of being of providing hardware servers and virtual servers. At the time, that was more of a thing that people cared about. Not so much now. You don't really hear about, people don't really care about having hardware, as opposed to these days, everyone's just happy with virtual machines. The other thing that came out really was that if you look at our two stacks, we've got Python on the one hand and we have .NET on the other hand. So our Python developers work in Linux and they're happy to work in that, and we want them to use the best tools for the job. You know, want to keep it simple, and you know, so for, you know, it became apparent at the beginning that we're going to have the ability to run both Linux and Windows. We wanted managed services where possible, so Amazon S3, Amazon RDS, relational database service, that's a really key thing. That was a big driver of our decision there as well. If you can get away with not having to manage a MySQL database, please do that. Configuring it is a nightmare, and really it's a full-time job. It's someone else's job. I don't want to do it. We want to hire developers to build features and not people to manage servers. And then it was a great networking stack. And overall, we didn't get too much lock-in. I mean, S3 is a sort of a lock-in to a certain extent, but ultimately the data is just files, it's easy to move around. ELB is just a load balancer, and so on. So it wasn't too much lock-in. Why not Azure? We had no choice. Sorry?
That's a great question.
Sure. Well, this maybe I wasn't clear about. This is about 2.5 years ago.
Oh, right.
Right. So I'm going to talk through the last 2.5 years, yeah. And eventually, you probably all figured it out. Yeah. We probably end up in Azure. Yeah. Sorry about that. That was meant to be a surprise, but yeah. All right. Okay. So let's pretend that question was never asked. And why not Azure? Well, they didn't have good Linux support at the time. It was out, but we didn't have the confidence in it. Microsoft's general philosophy two and a half years ago was a lot different than it is today. They've changed as an organization. That really wasn't going to help us. We'd made the decision to use the best tools for the job, not pigeonhole ourselves into one technology. We're a startup. We don't want to have to bear the brunt or the cost of having to rewrite stuff just because it doesn't work on a particular OS. So, the vision for Azure on that particular philosophy wasn't clear. Are these guys going to embrace open source? You know, can we go along on a journey with them? And the only database they had available was SQL Server. We weren't really using and leveraging the benefits of SQL or Oracle. We're just using pretty simple SQL. You know, we didn't anything complicated in terms of data models. We're typically put in a different data store. You know, like MongoDB, for example. So it just wasn't a choice in the end, unfortunately. Okay, so fast forward 2.5 years. Where are we? What sort of worked? We originally identified our business opportunity. We were using some Microsoft technology, some open source technology. We said yes to Azure, AWS, and no to Azure. What's worked? The business has worked. That's the great thing. We got something out, and the business has succeeded. We've proven our model. We've got customers, and we're now scaling up. We were helping customers save money and save time, and all of the things that we thought about when we sat around in a room, we're doing. We've got some really good success stories. We're helping customers to understand their hiring habits. We just helped Accenture analyze their alumni, for example. And really important to us as well is we're helping startups. That's a really good thing. So we're not tied to big enterprise. We've had, even yesterday, a startup who signed up and hired someone within 24 hours. They've saved a load of money and they didn't have to spend a lot of time talking to people. They had very little interaction with us, really. Some of our contractors are now working, on these sort of brands. So, the business is going well. Our team has grown. We've got the one thing that gives us the competitive advantage, I think, is that our team is our marketing and operations and all the business people. They've got a background in recruitment, so they understand the industry, they understand what we need to change, and so on. And back to the guidelines, make sure you can hire people. Well, our head of data science is a founder of the Pi Data conference and the meetup, and he's a published author on O'Reilly. These guys are accessible. The Python community is big. And we've got some big investors behind us now, and they've been behind some big names, lastminute.com, Mushy Monsters, and so on. But what can we improve? So if everything is great, why am I even thinking about moving to Azure, for example? What can we improve? Well, the beginning was keep it simple, get something out the door. So we built an app. It has different features. For example, you have stuff like account features, log in, log out. You've got the recruitment piece as well, which has got searching, it's got profiles, but we also do back office stuff. If you're a contractor, you've got your time sheeting and so on in there, contract management and everything else. So it's all one big app. It's an ASP.NET app. That's not really a good thing. It was good at the beginning because it helped us to get stuff out quickly. But now we want to continue innovating. And what we don't want to have to do is to say, okay, let's go and build a new feature. Let's say it's something to do with the back office. We're going to build some amazing contracts management piece for our clients really want this, and then have to retest something like profiles. It doesn't make sense. Logically, they're separate pieces of technology, but we roll them into one to get things done. So the downside then is it's hard to change, and we need to keep innovating. So what do we do? So our solution really is, it's a well-known solution, SOA, service-oriented architecture. It simplifies development. You end up working with smaller pieces of technology. You could potentially build each service independently, and we, back to our guidelines, we pick the best tool for the job. It allows us to build features more quickly. So, as I said, we can build features completely in isolation, potentially using the latest and greatest stuff. Maybe use Orleans or whatever you need. And the good thing for us, though, is that we modeled our system using domain-driven design. So we do have some nice, what they call themes or bounded contexts to split this up. So we were sort of future-proofing it a little bit without sort of overcomplicating it initially. The only problem with this is then, is that if you think about the complexity it's going to introduce. So let's say, for example, we split our app up into maybe 5 to 10 different pieces. Today, you scale by scaling horizontally. So potentially you could have, you know, dozens and dozens, if not hundreds of instances of your server or your service running everywhere. So that presents a problem. It's a lot more difficult than having maybe one big instance scaling up, for example. Sort of similar to what Richard was on about earlier. You know, the nature of the beast has changed now. You're going to end up with a much bigger space to play with. So that's the first thing. So architecturally, we've decided we're going to change this service-oriented architecture. Now it gives us a chance to revisit our technology choices. As I mentioned before, we picked Python, we picked ASP.NET. So what's the state of play with ASP.NET today? I mean, are we happy with it? I'm not saying we're going to rewrite stuff, but we can, if we want to, use a new technology if it's going to give us a competitive advantage, for example. So today, ASP.NET, we've had mixed results with it. It does have a huge overhead in terms of memory from what you're actually doing. It's a legacy framework written a long time ago. You know, if you deploy even a simple web API, you're bringing stuff like system.drawing into it because of the legacy in system.web. So it's very heavyweight. And Visual Studio is definitely slow compared to other tools. Some people may have different results on that, but I definitely think it is. For example, we use Sublime Text with TypeScript on the front end. We get full type completion. We get compile time stuff, and it's instant. It's really fast. I think anyone who works in Node.js probably has the same sort of benefits. So, okay, it's bad. Where is it going to be in 5 years? So obviously, people have probably heard about the latest thing, ASP.NET vNext. And for some reason, it seems to fit in exactly to our philosophy. Ideally, I would like to continue working in C#. I know the tool, back to the guidelines, better the tool you know. But is it going to fit into our philosophy in the longer term? Well, the next version, they're saying it's going to run on Linux, it's going to run on Windows. It's cloud optimized. Sounds like a big marketing piece, to be fair. But actually what it says is that it's going to be a self-contained, you can create an ASP.NET app, you basically roll it into a little folder and self-contained, including the CLR. They've also, by removing system.web, huge memory increases, or memory decreases, I should say, up to 80% just by dropping off system.web. The interesting part here is the self-contained elements, and I'll play into that in a bit when I talk about where we want to go in terms of the overall vision. And it doesn't need Visual Studio. That's great, in my opinion. I mean, Visual Studio is good for some stuff, but I'd like to be able to make the choice. What about the data science stack? Well, that's actually just been a great success. As I've said, we've hired good people. Everyone on the team is able to pick it up instantly. You just need basic programming skills. It was designed as a teaching language for new developers. And you know, it's very strong with machine learning and microservices. Very easy to create lightweight services. That fits into our new model, our service-oriented architecture. So those guys can work in machine learning, in Python, in the environments that they're happy with, and then deploy nice services that we consume, and it fits into our overall philosophy. So there's absolutely no reason to move away from Python. And to be honest, if people out there are afraid to get outside the C# world, you're going to spend a lot. There are machine learning solutions in .NET, and it is improving, but it really is, you know, peanuts compared to what you're getting in the Python world. And the key thing again is, who's going to be able to code in that stuff? What experience do people have? You know, there's a lot. The Python community is huge. The other thing, actually, I didn't even realize before I started this was data cleaning. Nobody ever talks about this. Data science is really sexy. It's all these mad things. You can predict the future. You know, Cortana and all that sort of stuff. But really, you end up just cleaning data. And that's about 60-70% of the work. The old school sort of stuff that, you know, that really the sort of job you'd give off to some junior or someone else. But Python's great. Yeah, you have to get into this stuff. You've got to love that data. And Python is really good in this space. It's got a lot of tooling. People are doing this stuff there. Natural language processing tools. Pandas, for example, is a really great library for dealing with badly structured data, badly formed data. So we're definitely staying with Python. Okay, so I've set the stage, right? We've got a business that needs to keep developing. We want to keep banging out new features. We want to get away from the monolithic architecture. We're going to go with the hope that ASP.NET vNext delivers what it says it's going to deliver. We're sticking with Python, but now we've got a much more complicated production environment. The DevOps story is going to be, it's much more, you know, it's a more complicated story. So think about this scenario then. You've got, you know, you've got your 20-odd services. Maybe one of them's running Python 2.7. One of them's running Python 3.3, .NET 3.5. You know, it explodes. And then they're horizontally scaled. So eventually you're going to start getting into a more difficult problem of just dealing with this. It's very hard to ship code onto it. Think about virtual machines, for example. What version are you going to install? Do you need a virtual machine for every separate service? It's going to be very expensive. Obviously the simple things like developing in your laptop and then deploying to QA and staging. I mean, it's the same today. It's very, very difficult. There's always these sorts of problems, though it works in my machine. That problem is really difficult. So the crux of this now is, this is the key part, enter the container model and Docker. So has anyone heard of Docker in the room? Okay, so a few people. So basically, in a nutshell, what Docker allows you to do is ASP.NET VNX has been talking about, is that you create an app, you stick it in a folder, and you Dockerize it, right? Containerize it. So it's like a container, right? What that means is that it's self-contained. You can pick it up and drop it in, and you could drop in four or five containers beside it. They're all isolated. In practice, what it means is that they run in their own user space. So it's like a virtual machine without the overhead. It's fully portable. So, you know, remember I spoke earlier about don't get locked in, for example. Great, fantastic. I can pick up my Dockerized application and drop it onto any different cloud. It's going to work because they're isolated and it's self-contained. The other example there is that maybe I've got five services that I've written in Python or .NET. Now, they don't need a massive amount of overhead, but logically they should be separated, but they're different versions. I don't want to have to go and rewrite an app or upgrade it to the latest version just because another one on the same machine is going to need that new version, and I don't want to have to run virtual machines for everything, right? And the other really cool thing about this is it's going to start fostering a better separation of concerns, right? Because if you're a developer, you sit down on your laptop, you work away in your code, you test it, you put it in a container, you Dockerize that container, it's ready to go, it's self-contained. You give that to your sysadmin, you give it to your cloud, they don't care about what's inside it, right? They only care about that it's a container and that it answers the protocols that the container is expected to answer. It's very similar, really, to thinking about, okay, I'm going to ship stuff all around the world, right? This is the analogy that they use. Richard's going to ship some sort of bike, I'm going to ship some cakes or whatever, right? Something completely different. But in the old days, it would have been very difficult to do this, but now all we do is I get my container, I stuff my stuff into it, he gets his container, he sticks whatever he wants into it. And then the infrastructure, right? All the shipping, all of those units, the machinery that picks the containers up, they understand the container level. They don't care about what's inside it. And that's the really key thing about this. So it's a great separation of concerns. As I kind of mentioned before, big difference in costs. If you can pack all of your containers into a smaller set of virtual machines, or you forget about the virtual machine layer, the cloud itself doesn't have to use so much resources. I mean, think about all those typical VMs out in the cloud today. They're just, you know, they're wasting so much CPU cycles and memory and the overhead of loading, booting the operating system and all that. In the end, it's going to cost you money. And if it costs you money, it costs your customers money. And then you're going to be competing, you know, on money that you shouldn't be. So yeah, loads and loads of benefits. Okay, so Azure. This is an Azure conference. Are we actually going to use Azure? So I mentioned before about our philosophy, our guidelines. Just we want to, you know, stick to the best tools and all the rest of it. And to be fair, Microsoft has changed. They've got MS OpenTech now. Now they're producing, a lot of open source code. They're committing to projects. And they're very quick as well. They're not hanging around waiting for 2 years like Microsoft used to do on this stuff. They really are at the front edge, especially MS OpenTech. The nature of Microsoft's organization has changed as well. They catered for this. They make money from the cloud now. So why would they turn me down just because I'm using Linux? I'm still going to pay them for all the other services. I'm going to pay them for their compute time and the data storage and networking and so on, so they can still make money out of me. And Azure is a lot more mature now than it was 2.5 years ago. You know, 2.5 years ago, as I laid out, it just wasn't a choice for us. We couldn't use it. Whereas today, it supports Linux. And they're introducing some really interesting services as well. You got that new machine learning as a service, mobile phone support through PhoneGap and so on. So Microsoft, what they're doing is they're continuing with their cloud, their platform sort of stuff, their platform services, but they're now waking up to the fact that people need to use different operating systems and so on. Then the big choice is still there though. I mean, AWS does a lot of this stuff too. So why are we picking Azure over AWS? Well, we still are .NET. I mean, that's really the heart of it. We do our data science work in Python, but the bulk of our code base is still a .NET, a set of .NET services. Even though you've got support for .NET on AWS, obviously we've been on there, you are sort of a second-class citizen in that sense. I mean, I'm not going to diss AWS. I've had 2.5 years with practically no failures whatsoever. It's been rock solid. But stuff like some of their platform as a service stuff sort of introduces the need to use Java and stuff like that, or just raw web services. And to be honest, we've got .NET, we've got Python. If we can avoid another language, we will, unless it's going to give us a serious competitive advantage. So that's tempting us back over. So we're able to reevaluate this choice. I think the platform as a service in the short term may have an edge as well. If you look at stuff like Azure websites, you can deploy Python, .NET, and so on onto it. Even though to me, it's not the actual strategic position to go with platform as a service. As I said, I've just introduced Docker. And that to me is the way it should go. Dockerized containers rather than a virtual machine with a bunch of different SDKs on it. Obviously, the disadvantage to Azure websites is that you have to stick to the version that they have on there. But in the meantime, it's going to help us to use that, because it's especially in the .NET space, we're probably a little bit early on this. We're using Docker on the Python side right now, and we're experimenting with Mono to validate it, but certainly on the .NET side, from a Windows point of view, it's probably a little bit away. I do know of certain initiatives within Microsoft. They have the Singularity project, which is a managed OS before. Now, I mean, I've not been told anything about this for definite, but they had the Drawbridge project as well. So the idea then is that we think certainly that this pattern around containerization, and Docker themselves have said that there's no reason why Windows couldn't be supported on it, is going to come. And if you look at the way MVC, the next version, is going, it sort of starts telling you really that, yes, this is the strategy. We want, you know, self-contained applications. So the future looks bright, but we want to start innovating still now. We don't want to delay our breaking up of our monolith. We don't want to delay that until later. We want to start doing that stuff now. Backend as a service as well. Loads of innovative things to help us to develop stuff quickly. As I said, does it fit into our future vision? We think it does. Also, in addition to that, from a DevOps point of view, now you've got Chef and Puppet, and that was very fast as well. So, you know, as I said, it looks now that whereas 2.5 years ago Microsoft didn't fit into our philosophy, now it does. And the benefit of .NET on Azure is driven us towards that. So we're testing on Azure now. We're still in production on AWS. We've done a lot of testing. It's very successful. Microsoft have helped us a lot in the migration, and we're pretty close to going live on AWS on Azure and switching off AWS. So yeah, if you want to make hiring contractors easy, just get in touch. We're very cheap. We're the cheapest out there, and we're ready to help. Okay. Good.